Hey everyone, welcome back to the Haunted Corner. I'm Ashton and I'm glad you're here today. I wanted to say a quick thank you to everyone who reached out with the kind words about my new food blog. I'm so excited to share my recipes with you all again. Be sure to follow The Haunted Foodie for updates if you haven't already. My green chili recipe will be up this week, and you're going to need to make that to go with my homemade tortillas, which that recipe is already up there. So watch for the green chili recipe. Also, many of you have been asking about the books that I'm currently reading, so I'll be adding that to the blog as well. But you can add me on Goodreads if you're on there. And I'm always looking for new book recommendations. Oh, I'm also currently reading the Throne of Glass series by Sarah J. Maas. I'm reading Air of Fire currently, and I'm almost done with that. So that's it. This episode's coming out a little bit later than I wanted it to. It's been a bit of an interesting weekend. My boys were at the rec center on Friday night, and they were playing basketball with their friends. My youngest was roughhousing with one of the other kids, and he fell to the ground and he broke his arm pretty badly. So he went by ambulance to the hospital and they had to put it back in place, but it's not super back into place. So he's likely going to need surgery. We're going to be following up with the orthopedic doctor this week to confirm, but keep us in your thoughts with that. Poor little guy. He's never broken a bone before and never had surgery, never had anything like that. So it's been a lot for him this weekend. He was really concerned that he wouldn't be able to play football later this year. So we had to talk about that and patience when it comes to the timeline. So we'll see how it goes. Thank you to everyone who has stopped by and dropped off food and snacks. We have a good tribe around us, so I appreciate you all. But I'm back today, and I'm excited to talk to you guys about some reportedly haunted lighthouses. So let's get into it. Up first, we're heading to St. Augustine, Florida. Perched on the northern edge of Anastasia Island in St. Augustine stands the St. Augustine Lighthouse, one of the oldest and most haunted structures in America. The lighthouse has been guiding ships from sea into shore since 1874. Prior to the Seven Years' War, the Spanish built a watchtower on the island made of shell rock and wood. Following the war, when Florida was given to Britain, the British added a watchtower, making it taller. Now, following the Revolutionary War, a high volume of ships flooded to the area, with residents evacuating South Carolina. Because of this increase in ships, shipwrecks were becoming quite the issue in the area. On one particularly rough night, New Year's Eve in 1782, 16 ships crashed while trying to enter the harbor. Because of this, the watchtower eventually transitioned into a lighthouse to guide ships to shore in the area. Originally, it was lit with a system of lamps and reflector panels. The lighthouse had to be raised 10 feet in 1852 and eventually rebuilt altogether due to the rising sea levels. Congress approved a $100,000 fund for the construction of a new lighthouse, and on October 15th of 1874, lighthouse keeper William R. Russell lit the oil lamp inside of the new Fresnel lens for the first time. Following a fire in 1980, which gutted the vacated keeper's house, the property was almost sold. But before that could happen, the Junior Service League stepped in and raised over $1.2 million to restore the keeper's house, the lighthouse tower, and the original Fresnel lens. Today, the lighthouse consists of the original tower, the keeper's house, a garage, two summer kitchens, and a Coast Guard barracks. It is also listed on the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, as well as the National Register of Historic Places. People travel from all over the world to visit the lighthouse, learn the history, and climb the 219 steps to the top. So you might be thinking, okay, what makes this place so haunted? Well, it could be the bloody history of the location following several wars, but some believe that it's more than just that. The stories of hauntings date back really far. One of them begins with a man named Hezekiah Pitti, and this was during the construction of the new lighthouse in 1871. Hezekiah oversaw the construction of the lighthouse, and his children often joined him at the job site. On the site, a railway cart was used to move the supplies from supply ships docked at Salt Run to the construction site. Riding the cart down to the water was a favorite pastime of the Pitti children. They would ride the cart to the water and bring it back up to the site, only to ride it again. There was only a wooden board at the end of the track that stopped the cart from tipping over into the water. Well, on July 10th of 1873, the children, Mary, who was 15, Eliza, who was 13, and Carrie, who was 4, along with an unknown girl who was 10, they were riding in one of the carts, as they normally did, when the cart crashed into the water and flipped over, trapping the girls underneath it. One of the workers, a man named Dan Sessions, saw what happened and raced to help the girls. He was able to flip the cart back over, but by that time, Eliza and Mary, as well as the unknown girl, had all drowned. The only survivor was the 4-year-old named Carrie. In the over 150 years since the accident, many paranormal experiences have been attributed to the 3 girls who died that day. Employees and visitors alike have reported interactions with playful and childlike spirits which they believe belong to the 3 girls. One event involved one of the light keepers hearing footsteps and laughter upstairs in the keeper's house, but when he made it to the top of the stairs, no one else was there. A man who rented the keeper's house in the 90s told a similar story. One night, he woke up to find a small girl standing by his bed. As he blinked his eyes to look at her, she disappeared. During the renovation, many of the construction workers reported unexplained things, and the activity continued long after the construction had stopped. One night, a staff member was closing up for the night in the lighthouse tower when he heard giggling at the top. Thinking that he had left someone at the top of the tower, he returned up there to find it empty. As he began to head back down the stairs, he heard the same giggles below him, but found no one there when he reached the bottom. Tour guests are often a target of playful encounters with the beyond. Some have described seeing a young girl dressed in period clothing gazing out of the lighthouse windows. Others have more detailed and specific experiences. On one occasion, a guest was exploring the maritime hammock trails and came upon a young girl in a Victorian outfit sitting on a bench reading a book. She was distracted for a moment, and by the time she looked back, the little girl was gone. And in a similar instance, a woman on a tour approached another guest to compliment her on her daughter's behavior during the tour. Confused, the woman said she had no daughter. The other woman then told her that a little girl had been standing by her side most of the evening. And come to find out, there were no children on the tour that night. One evening, a female on a dark of the moon tour was standing on the metal staircase of the lighthouse tower. As she took her first step to climb the stairs, she found that her shoelace had been tied to the staircase. Now, many of the reports of spooky interactions are lighthearted and not malicious at all, but there is one specific specter known by employees as the Man in Blue, who appears to workers and gives them trouble throughout their shifts. Many people believe that the Man in Blue is a spirit of the old lighthouse keeper, Joseph Andrew. He plummeted to his death at the lighthouse while painting the original tower in 1859. Others state that this is the spirit of another keeper, a man who hanged himself inside the tower because of the solitude of the job. Visitors and staff describe the overwhelming scent of cigars on the landing of the tower and believe that this is the Man in Blue. One worker had a much more malicious interaction with the Man in Blue when he chased him up and down the 219 stairs of the lighthouse. The man refused to come back to work after that night. Now, most of these stories that I shared today came directly from the St. Augustine Lighthouse website. I love that they lean into the spooky history, and I'm definitely adding this location to the haunted tour. Up next, we're not traveling far to visit the Pensacola Lighthouse, another of Florida's famously spooky lighthouses. In 1923, after the U.S. took control of Florida, Congress authorized $6,000 for the Pensacola Lighthouse. To serve the port until the lighthouse was finished, the floating light vessel, Aurora Borealis, was transferred from the mouth of the Mississippi River, where a lighthouse had just been built. Because of the rough waters, the ship was anchored inside the bay entrance just behind Santa Rosa Island. On March 24th of 1824, Winslow Lewis, responding to an advertisement in the Boston Patriot, offered to build a new lighthouse and a dwelling for $4,927. His offer was accepted by Stephen Pleasanton, the fifth auditor of the Treasury, on April 2nd of 1824. Construction on the new lighthouse began. The lighthouse, which was 40 feet tall and was built on a 40-foot bluff at the south entrance to Pensacola Bay, it was first lit on December 20th, 1824, by keeper Jeremiah Ingram, who looked over the property until his death in 1840. His wife, Michaela, took over following his death. By the 1850s, complaints started to come in regarding the lighthouse. More specifically, the fact that the light from the lighthouse was being blocked by trees on Santa Rosa Island because of its position and because of its height. The light was also said to be too dim to see. Around this time, a lighthouse board had been created, and the board recommended that a first-class seacoast light, at least 150 feet tall, be built at Pensacola. The site for the new lighthouse would be a half mile from the current lighthouse, and Congress chipped in for the new project. They allocated $25,000 for the lighthouse in 1854 and an additional $30,000 in 1856. The new lighthouse stood 159 feet tall. Construction was completed in 1858, and the lamp in the tower was first lit on New Year's Day in 1859 by keeper Joseph Palms. Joseph's family had watched over the original lighthouse for decades. His mother-in-law was Michaela Ingram. Now, between 1863 and 1886, 11 different keepers served at the Pensacola Lighthouse. Of those 11, 9 were removed from duty for offenses ranging from intoxication to neglect. The lighthouse was damaged during the Civil War, and the original Fresnel lens was removed. The lens was recovered after the war and was reinstalled in the tower's lantern room in 1869, and a new keeper's quarter was built that same year. The lighthouse was struck by lightning not once, but twice, once in 1874 and then again the next year. But Mother Nature was not done rocking the lighthouse. In 1886, the Great Charleston earthquake hit the area and sent the lighthouse swaying. A former keeper described the incident, saying, quote, "It lasted between 3 and 4 minutes and was accompanied by a rumble as if people were ascending the steps, making as much noise as possible. This shock was like a tremor, causing the lens to vibrate from side to side. The pendulum clock on the tower floor was stopped by the shock at 9:07 p.m. End quote. Many different lightkeepers stayed on the property throughout time until the lighthouse was automated in 1965. Today, the keeper's quarters adjacent to the lighthouse tower houses a museum and gift shop, also administrated by the Pensacola Lighthouse Association, which is a nonprofit with a small staff and a ton of volunteers. The Pensacola Lighthouse Association was also responsible for the renovation of the lighthouse, and the large number of tours throughout time have brought about tales of hauntings that have left even the bravest of visitors shaken. Visitors who had traveled from all over to visit the lighthouse and climb the 177 steps to the top. The lighthouse became so popular in paranormal lore that ghost hunters investigated the property during one of their episodes. The lighthouse is located on Naval Air Station Pensacola, and there are private and overnight ghost hunts from the spring until November if you're interested. But before you plan your trip, let's get into the reported hauntings of the lighthouse. There's a reason the lighthouse was once named the most haunted lighthouse in the United States. Long before it was automated, keepers would report feeling as if they weren't alone on the property. Phantom footsteps and voices calling to the keepers would scare them off. Emmett Hatton, who as a child lived with his parents in the lighthouse when his father was the keeper in the 1930s and 40s, validated the claim, saying he often heard the sound of breathing in the lantern room and unexplained footsteps that would disappear as quickly as they appeared. One of the most well-known spirits is named Samuel. He was a former lightkeeper, and he likes to hang out in the tower and is particularly fond of the ladies, who are reported feeling touched by the spirit. Other visitors have seen his face peering out at them from one of the windows. One of the men who replaced Samuel as lightkeeper was a man named George Clifford. George's daughter, Ella, married her husband at the lighthouse in 1903. And then in 1905, 5 months after giving birth to her daughter, Naomi, Ella passed away from complications from the birth. Her parents adopted and raised Naomi in the lighthouse following her death. The room where Ella passed away is reportedly one of the most haunted places on the property and is aptly named the Bloody Bedroom. It's said to be haunted by the spirit of a little girl who has been seen playing and running throughout the room. Two other well-known spirits that are known to wander the halls of the keeper's quarters are those of Jeremiah and Michaela Ingram. And Michaela isn't exactly friendly to visitors. She has been seen on many different occasions by visitors who have reported being called names by the woman and having objects thrown their way. The basement is another active location, housing a reported 7-foot spirit of a man named Thomas, who appears to visit her but doesn't seem to be malicious. The spirits of 2 other children named Lizzie and Joey, who died from yellow fever in 1922, have also been seen on the property. They've been known to wander all over and walk through visitors, causing them a fright. If you've visited the Pensacola Lighthouse and have a story to send my way, please do. Maybe we'll just do a haunted lighthouse tour. Maybe even just like a haunted Florida lighthouse tour, because apparently they're all there. So this place looks amazing. I'll share pictures on the blog so you can check it out. Thanks for tuning in today. I hope you enjoyed the episode. The sources for today's episode will be listed on the blog post for the episode at www.thehauntedcorner.com. That will also be linked to it in the show notes. Check out the other episodes of The Haunted Corner, available now wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts, with new episodes dropping every week. If you're enjoying the podcast and would like to share your support, head on over to Patreon. You'll have access to the exclusive Patreon-only episodes, one of which is coming very soon. You'll have early and ad-free access to the regular episodes, plus a lot more. So head on over to the Patreon, patreon.com/thehauntedcorner, to join now. Follow us on social media at The Haunted Corner on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and TikTok. If you're enjoying the podcast, be sure to tell a friend. And if you have a case suggestion or a correction to share, please send it to thehauntedcorner@gmail.com or submit it through the website. Until next time, be kind and take care of yourselves and each other, and we'll see you soon. Bye.